Welcome to Inside Out, The Naked Truth, coming to you live from Lupin Lodge in the Los Gatos Hills of California, where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked.
Nudity is not just skin deep, and we do our best to uncover our truth from common and not so common beliefs, perceptions, assumptions, attitudes about the world, and we try and do this through our conversation and poetry and our insanity. That's really where I am tonight.
We sprinkle a little music and humor in along the way.
Right. Well, that's part of the insanity.
I am Rochelle Alicia Strider.
And I'm Insane Errol Strider, as you will see.
Tonight's show is brought to you by Go Raw, 100% raw food that not only tastes good, but is good for you.
And Go Raw can be found in Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and the organic section of Costco. And you can go to goraw.com and find a store near you and eat some of that super, super healthy, munchy food. We recommend it for people who get the munchies. You know who you are.
Well, tonight is the second in our At Home with Rochelle and Errol Strider series. And I had a good time last week, and I think I'm going to have as much fun as I did then. The only difference between us actually being in our house and being here in the studio pretending it's our house is that we have earphones and microphones.
Well, there's another big difference. You wouldn't have Rochelle offering you something. Would you like a piece of this? Would you like a piece of cake? Would you like a drink? Can I make you something? Give you something?
Well, I can still offer it. The problem is you won't be able to get it.
It reminds me of that time when your mother, we were visiting Rochelle's mom in Brooklyn and dad, and that whole milieu, Jewish New York, Brooklyn milieu, if you know of it or aware of it, then you'll know where I
speak. Unless you live in New York.
Anyway, so we were at a gathering, and your mother asked your dad, they were cutting cake, and she asked him if he wanted another piece, and he said no, and she put it on his plate.
She was a great respecter of persons.
Right. So that brings us, Ms. Strider, to the question of boundaries as they were developing in your childhood, in your relationship between you and your mother, and how the boundaries were set or not set. And that was the same woman I was just hearing Errol talk about.
That's right, Dr. Hume.
Pronounced human.
Yeah, well, there weren't that many boundaries. I mean, the thing is that she had her own boundaries, and they definitely included you. You know, she just would take, she'd just be part of your life, whether you wanted it or not. She just felt, you know, that you belonged to her, and therefore she could do and say anything she wanted because that was it. She did not. So I had a very private life as a child, things I did not speak about or talk about at all or share. But I shared the things she wanted to hear, so that made her happy.
But this is juicy, this topic, respecting boundaries. Y'all out there, can you hear that? We're going to get into some boundary respecting or disrespecting, depending upon where you stand on the issue. Now, thing about boundaries is that we all got them, and some of us are better at making them work than others. And so that become a problem for folks because they don't realize they're breaking other people's boundaries.
Well, what defines a boundary in the first place?
Well, let me jump in here to the conversation, if I may. I'm Dr. Seymour Jesuit. And the boundaries is where you say, this is where I leave off and something else picks up. And what that means is we have some sort of self-identity. You can talk about these things, for example, this might be a boundary, but you can't talk about my private parts, which is often the tempted subject here at Lucan Clothing Optional Environment. But we won't go there.
Well, okay, that's one kind of boundary. That's, you know, like what, you know, what I decree I can talk about and what I can't talk about. But I think that for me, the boundaries that that I experienced as a child was that I wasn't seen. If I wasn't seen, there were no boundaries, because the very nature of my personality creates a boundary. You know, this is who I am, right? So if who I am is not recognized, therefore there's no boundaries, because I'm not seen, and you can move through me, around me, in me, out of me, you know, and it's it feels disrespectful. But when you're little, it just made me feel invisible.
I'm not sure I see how that's a boundary thing. Do you all out there see that?
No, I do. I mean, I see it as a boundary thing. What don't you see? So let me hear what you're...
Well, because if you're not seen, then there's this... The other person is just extending themselves as far as they can go, regardless of what may want to show up and ask for some attention.
Well, there's no boundaries then.
Well, if you could see my arm gesture, you would see that I just found myself bringing my arms into encirclement and, in fact, physically creating a boundary. So, yes, I get it.
Yeah, right. But it's not, like, as a respecter of boundaries is a respecter of a person to me. A person is a definition. A human being is a definition. We're body, thoughts, feelings that define us. And if there are no, if those definitions are non-existent, then there's no boundaries. I mean, to the other person, if you don't respect who I am as a human being, you don't see me. Therefore, you do not see the boundaries. And if you don't see the boundaries, you act as if they don't exist. Isn't that true?
Yeah. As we talk about boundaries, it's a very elusive thing, because it's not a literal thing. It has to do with like psychic space. Like, this is the
space.
But
sometimes it's literal. Like, if you hit me.
Well, of course.
That's going past my physical boundaries.
Of course. I'm taking that as a given, dear. But it may not be a given.
There's nothing given. You're not given.
She gives me nothing. Nothing. The woman gives me nothing. Everything I have to earn, scrape on my knees, grovel for this woman. Give me something. Something.
That's not really true. I take that back. That was a big error on my part, because I think we are given our personalities. We are given all of this. And what we're not given is the awareness to see that in other people. You know, that wonderful thing, you know, like, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. See others as you would see yours. You know, all of that sense of the I-thou that you talked about last week, that there's this other there that is that we want to respect.
Like we teach our children to say thank you.
Right.
Almost every parent I know says, say thank you.
Right.
And when I hear that, I wonder if that's the best way to teach that. Say thank you. I guess it's good in the sense that it gets things going. But what you're trying to teach is gratitude, and gratitude is related to boundaries, mm-hmm. too, isn't it?
Yes, I think so.
So gratitude is such a profound aspect of life, because when you're feeling grateful, oh, thank you. I mean, think about your last satisfactory moment where you just went, oh, thank you. And if you haven't had one, I'd like to suggest that you have one now, listener. Just go like, imagine like the biggest, best thing is just like converging into you right at this very second. And what would be your level of gratitude? And how would you express that gratitude? Oh, it's got an oh in there somewhere. I don't know where that would be.
But yeah, it's something that's so much bigger than what you can contain that it comes out.
Now, here's an interesting concept. That's true. According to this book that we read, and for which I had a meeting today, the Arantia book, that as we move through the universe, evolving out of this little life and into an ever more expanded, multidimensional being that is able to harness, become one with diverse aspects of reality unendingly. And we get to like the center, and we've like gone through our, you know, our graduate school of our achievement, and we get to like the center where the source promulgates existence, paradise isle, as some would call it. And the impulse to give gratitude, to worship, to honor the Creator is so intense that they provide gratitude guides. That's not exactly the term that they use, but they have people to help us.
People?
Not people, these beings who help us be able to express the gratitude so we don't basically blow up with appreciation and disperse into smithereens.
Well, gosh, that would be a terrible way to express gratitude.
It really would, wouldn't it?
Blow up and turn into smithereens. I don't think that's exactly what I would depict as gratitude.
No. I think I kind of got started.
I mean, there's an awesomeness about that. You know, it's very awesome, the gratitude. It fills me with awe when somebody does something that I appreciate so much, that I'm so grateful for, that I'm in a state of awe. You know, it's awesome. And short of hugging them and you know, doing all this stuff, and it's just a feeling that opens my heart and makes me feel good, you know, and I think that's what so much is. Did you want to feel good?
Well, then, you know what I suggest? Let the good times roll.
Okay.
Some fun. You only live once, but when you're dead, you're gone. So let the good times roll. Well, let the good times roll. Well, it makes no difference if you're young or old. Just get together and let the good times roll.
Rainy weather. If you wanna have a ball.
Sam's Road.
Now what you gonna do?
Yeah.
Who was that?
That was, well, it was Eva Cassidy. We've played her music. She is a recent discovery of mine. Unfortunately, a little late for Eva because she died in 1996, but she's fabulous. And when you hear that, her singing like that, and I don't know who the guy was. This was just on her album. I may play another song of hers later because I'd love you to hear.
With her.
I'm in love with her. I am. and love is blind and not stupid.
You're not in love with her. You love her. Yeah. There's a difference.
Well, when you hear the variety, I think you'll be impressed.
I think this could end up being Eva Cassidy night.
We'll see. We are Inside Out, The Naked Truth, coming to you live from Lupin Lodge, where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked.
Of course, because the truth is always naked. There's no way you can put clothes on the truth and have it be truth.
All right, I have to make a confession. Okay, all right. Yeah.
I got nervous. Confessions make me nervous.
Well, I'm going to get naked, okay? And I was on a conversation today with some folks, and my ego got so pushed. I could feel the buttons, the purple one, the one that was sewed on when I was 3. I had a button that had been sewed on like when I was 5 or 6 with blue thread. I had another button that was several from my teenage time, which was a very insecure time for me. I wanted to be liked. Several of those were like alternately pushed. That was very interesting. They didn't just get one steady push in this conversation. They were like, beep, 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 beep. And I could feel the resistance come up in me, and I could feel the self-justification, and I could feel myself wanting to judge, and all because, you know, it wasn't showing up the way I decided I wanted it to be. Life. And so I got to watch myself do such a tap dance and justify it and all the defenses. Speaking of boundaries, I became my boundary. I think that's what happens when you go nuts in the ego. You become so identified with your boundary that you lose yourself in the boundary, which is an arbitrary thing at best in the first place.
Wow. Wow. That was a beautiful confession there, Ella. Made my heart happy.
What can I tell you?
Yeah, if we only realize, you know, when we get all bent out of shape, that it is, first, number one, it is always fear-driven. And the what is the best expression of our fear, usually, if it's not corporeal, is our ego, the death of our ego. Our ego is threatened. Our sense of self
exactly.
is threatened. Our image is threatened. And we really believe that's who we are. So we have to defend it. We have to fight against it. I mean, we really get into it. I know I do. The recognition, to me, is what it's all about. First, we become aware.
Well, it starts there. You have to acknowledge it. We have these 4 steps of awakening, for lack of a better way of saying what they're for.
I just want you all to realize that you are sitting with us in our living room right now. That's why he's talking to you, because you're there.
I assume you're there. Man, if you're not there, then where are you be? What are you doing? What's going on?
So what were you going to say? I didn't want to break into that. I just wanted to acknowledge our guests. You were about to say something, and I cut you off.
Yeah.
I do that a lot because I get excited with my idea.
It's true.
And I know that if I don't say it right now, I'll forget it. But then if I say it right now, you forget it.
Right.
So one of us is going to forget something, no matter what happens. So it was your turn and to forget it, and I didn't forget it. But next time, it'll be my turn.
Next time, we'll remember it. Next show will be devoted to remembering the things that we forgot.
Forget it.
Okay, be that way.
But you can't remember what you were saying. Now we're really down the road.
It'll come back to me.
It was about ego and death. Oh, the first step is remembering. Oh, the four steps.
Thank you. Wow. Okay, here they are. The first step is acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you have to acknowledge it. You have to recognize that you are in a state of resistance to whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's the first step. And in each of these four steps, I've designed an operative verb so you have something to do, because everybody's going, well, how do you do that? Or what do you do when you talk about growth or anything? How do you do it? So in the first step of acknowledgement, the doing is simply describe it, like I did. You know, I watched my ego, I watched my it go into defensiveness. It's helpful not to identify with it and say, oh, well, I got defensive, or I did this, or I did that, because actually I did none of those things. It was this fabrication that I project out that I get people to see as my identity, which is my ego, lest they see the my authentic self, and cause me to come to tears out of the profoundness of all our being.
What's the second step?
Acceptance. And the acceptance, the doing, is the feeling. You allow yourself to feel what you feel. There it is, and it brought up certain feelings. So now you allow yourself, you accept the feelings. Ah, I feel sad. I feel hurt. I feel not seen, as you said. I feel less than. I feel belittled. I feel denied, and all that. No, ashamed. Yeah, underneath all that is there's a feeling of shame. Well, I'm not worthy. That's why I'm being rejected. And I go through all those feelings and allow myself to feel those feelings. And that's the theater of it. We were talking today about how theater can be used in this retreat growth experience that people are putting on. And so to me, the theater is the giving feeling to it. And then the next stage is appreciation. And in this stage, the action is to share. How many of you, I say how many, like I look around all over the people listening and count. It's such a funny thing to say. How many of you out there are, you know, a bunch of them are raising their hands? Count.
Go ahead.
Okay.
So we appreciated, and what does that look like to appreciate all these feelings? What are we appreciating?
Well, wait a minute. The expression in the appreciation stage is to share. And what I was going to ask you out there and in here is about a time where someone shared a very difficult experience, or you shared a very difficult experience that may have had shame or fear or brought up stuff. And the sharing of it was empowering to the person who heard it.
How nice.
And that's why that step is so critical in the process. And what you begin to appreciate is the value in it. See, before
you just shared it by saying, I have something to confess.
Yes.
That was your sharing, right?
Yes. Yes, I've been sharing it. And And we'll go to the value. And then the next step, after these are A's, they're all A, easy to remember. Acknowledgement, acceptance, appreciation, and then actualization.
Wow. What's that? Actualization.
What's that? Of course, I don't think it'd be possible to describe the actualization as in the capital actualization. But if we kind of want to get down to this small first letter, A, anytime there is a moment where there is a transformation from resistance to forgiveness to essentially value and love, that to me is a moment of actualization. That's what happens in a moment of actualization.
So you call actualization is we're actualizing love?
Actualizing love / your being. Because they're one and the same. Love is, I was just reading that in the Love Without End book today, and I recorded it because I like to listen to these sayings. And when I record them, I then listen to them, and I edit them, and I listen to them again. And sometimes I feel like I'm hammering with a chisel these ideas into my brain so that I'll get them. Yeah. By listening to so many times, you know.
But don't we have to, like, even if they're in our brain, don't we have to move them all the way through our body, down into our cells, through our toes, into our little toes even?
Well, that's where the theater...
My little toe is very tiny.
You do have tiny little toes, you know, Rochelle. I never wanted to go public with that. And for many years, I was thinking, you know, should we tell people about Rochelle's
not tiny just my look at my little toes? Little finger.
I can't even see it. It's so tiny. Where is it? Is that the one on next to the other big one? Okay.
This is appreciation of self. This appreciation of this four A's that Errol talks about, this acknowledgement, acceptance, appreciation, actualization, and I know they are very clear in his mind. For me, they're just, I have to move a little further into them. And
I can see that.
You know, in terms of having you define it for me, you know, it doesn't pop out as like, I know exactly what you're talking about unless you, but having defined it, I understand it and appreciate it. I also want to acknowledge that you said that. And I also, I will tell you right now that I love you. So therefore, I did them all.
Uh-huh. That was quick. That's when the actualization is constant, because it's so quick from the point of recognition of what you're up against that's causing you distress to just holding it rather than, fleeing or fighting it. And then as you hold it, you allow yourself to kind of, if you imagine putting a key in a key, when you make a copy of a key and they make a, what do you call it, with the clay, an impression.
Right, an impression.
And you make an impression. And so you allow, you become like clay. I think that's what that is, non-resistance. And you allow that phenomenon that's impacting you in an uncomfortable way to just make an impression on, make its impression into your being, and you receive it. And I think that's very...
You're receiving the sense of discomfort.
Well, you're receiving that, and you're receiving the messenger of the discomfort, all of it, yes.
Because I'm aware that I do work here at Lupin, and it does not work it's work that needs to be done. And, you know, if you were in a flood, and you'd be taking mud and putting it in a bucket, you know, to get it out of your house. It's work that needs to be done.
Actually, you'd be doing that, Rochelle, because no one else would be thinking, if I put mud in a bucket, that's going to help the flood.
No, but I mean, if your house has been flooded
and
there's mud in your house, you have to get rid of it. You would be doing that. You know, what I'm saying is that if something needs to be done and you can do it because you're capable of doing it, you know, why not do it? You know, you're not being compromised. You're not being made less.
Right.
But a lot of people feel they're being made less because they feel that's not who I am. That's not what I do. You know, I don't do that. I do something more wonderful or something different or whatever. So to do this is beneath me. And here's boundaries once again, and ego. And I wrote down, what does your ego look like?
Oh, on that thought. What does your ego look like? And then I'm going to come back and share a story with you. Here's a song that it's something I want to sing to my ego, okay? If I could sing this, I would sing this song to my ego, and because it's enslaving me. And I think this song really addresses that. Here we go. It's called No More. And the singer is Sammy Davis Jr. himself.
Oh, my gosh. Most, a lot of people don't even know who he was.
You know, I'm going to stop because...
That's not the song.
No, it is the song, but sometimes the computer won't play it. It's just like out of spite. It'll go, nope, I'm not going to play that. And this little
you think the computer has an ego?
I think it does. You know, I think.
Yeah. I refuse to play that song. I just don't
it
like
just
it. It
doesn't
has nothing
put
to
it
do
on.
With me.
And it puts this little icon next to it that says, you know, well, screw. Doesn't say screw you exactly, but it says we're not going to play this song. So
okay, I guess we're not going to hear No More by Sammy Davis Jr. I was looking forward to it, too.
It's a fabulous song. But
maybe
you know what? That brings up something else that I think is just as important, is to realize that the universe is always laughing.
October throws us up for my feet.
frightened howling, holding her breath for me. Never thought for myself a city shoe, but it's made for today, and it breaks my heart in two. Here's one to hold on to it, but there's no.
The universe is laughing.
Ha! Huh. Oh, that's for sure.
Yeah. The universe is laughing.
You know what? You coined a wonderful phrase. You said, if we really knew, we'd be laughing.
Yes.
Well, obviously, the universe knows.
You'd think. After all this.
Who sang that?
That was the Guggenheim. Who are these people? The Guggenheim Growth, something or other? No, the Guggenheim Grotto.
Oh, okay.
You've heard of them, folks, the Guggenheim Grotto.
Well, you're hearing them here tonight if you've never heard them before, and they were fun. Sounded like they were in a concert or in a club, and it was recorded.
And you're listening to Inside Out, the Naked Truth. Not just your semi-clothed truth or your lingerie truth. No, this is...
Well, it's as naked as we can get.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, it's naked because this is what we talk about. This is what we think about. This is what we're about. We love to explore things. We like to explore thoughts. We like to explore concepts. We like to explore truisms,
and falsisms. I like the falsisms.
You would indeed.
I've had many a falsism that I've explored and lived out.
Probably. And we don't even know that they're falsisms until we hit a truism. And then the truism makes the falsism look really small and insignificant.
Do you think this would be a good time to share my experience of what happened to me when I discovered the Yeshua directly? Jesus, when I had this experience, okay, I'm going to go for it. You know, I'm usually kind of shy about this. Isn't that interesting?
Well, we all are, because, you know, there's so much, I don't know. When you have an experience, it's your experience. And I think when we tell our experiences, people think, oh, if they didn't have that experience, then they're less than, or like they should have that experience too, or you're, what are you doing? You're honking your horn, making yourself special, or blah, blah, blah. You know, people are, I think when someone...
Which people?
The people who don't know who they are.
Wow.
And they haven't discovered how uniquely marvelous they are. When somebody talks about something that's unique and marvelous to them, they feel less. Because they don't know that they too are unique and marvelous. And if they did, then they would be happy to hear what you had to say about your unique, marvelous adventures.
As the Course in Miracles says, comparison is of the ego. And I could feel myself in this conversation, going back to my humiliating experience of myself, getting into the tempted. I didn't really fall into the comparison racket, but it sure was inviting. It's like walking by a donut shop and, man, those donuts in that window, boy, the fried sugariness of them are really tempting. That's kind of like what my ego presents me when it says, go on, compare yourself to her or him or that. And it's like, I'd like to compare myself. Yeah, well, that would feel really good to me. Am I looking to live the truth, or am I looking to continue to be enslaved by the truth? And so now I can tell you that's just not going to happen. Okay? Not going to happen. You know why? No more. No more. Yes.
It's ready. Huh?
It's getting there, okay? And we're going to so appreciate it by the time it arrives. Because it's going through internet space. And I don't want to get Amazon Music for PC and install for free. I want to just play the song. I just bought the song while we were doing this because the version I had didn't work. I said, okay, I'll spend the $1.29, which is not easy for me.
No, Errol is very frugal.
That's a very kind way of putting it. I would call myself a cheapskate, but, you know, that's just me. Who am I to judge?
I'm kind.
Who am I to judge?
So what does the ego look like? I come up with that question. I've been saying it again and again and again. You know, just because it feels like it has an identity when we're experiencing life and interacting with other people through our egos.
The ego is our boundaries that we've identified with. That's the ego, going back to the boundary thing. It's our boundaries. It's our way of conceiving ourselves based upon, for example, how much you have. If I have this kind of house or this kind of furniture or this kind of job, then I'm something. And if I don't have that, then I'm nothing. So I've
both are your egos.
Of course. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, the ego is not just exalted. It can be diminished, too.
And that's important to remember, because often people think we go on ego trips, which, of course, we do, about exalting ourselves. But what you just said is very important, that we can also compare ourselves by being less than.
I think the what would you call it, the benchmark or the hallmark or the identifying aspect of what an ego looks like is it is the great separator.
Yeah.
It pushes off. It creates I'm different than you. I'm less than you, more than you. It doesn't matter, but I'm not the same as you.
Right.
You know, the minute you get into the sameness, your ego is having a death throes.
Right, right.
When I truly connect with somebody, my ego is passing out and dying of asphyxiation.
Right, right.
It's not being fed at all.
Exactly.
So yeah, that's how I identify. That's what the ego looks like to me. It's a great separator. It's got its hand out, pushing off, always making itself special. The center of attention is a big way of putting it. And yet, you can become the center of attention without your ego.
Oh, Oh, that's interesting. Tell me about that. You're about to find out how you become the center of attention without the use of your ego.
Well, because we are attractive in the sense that we have spirit rising in all of us. I mean, that's how we were created. We were created as these wonderful, I know, you know, this my beautiful metaphor of the, what are the things in a temperature?
Mercury.
Mercury. A little mercury is, you know, when I was a child, a thermometer broke and all the mercury scattered all over the floor. And I was watching it and it was like I was moving things with a pen, or a pencil, actually. I didn't have a pen in those days. And,
thank you. This is good. We needed to clarify this, lest you think she would have been using a computer.
And it was pushing the little mercuries around, and as they got close to each other, they came into union. It's like they were so attractive. They had an attractive component that brought them into union. And so I kept doing it until there was one ball of mercury. All the little pieces of mercury, all the little separate balls, had come together into one mercury.
That is so cute. Those little pieces of mercury. What did you call them? I love that. Just little pieces of mercury, like little old timers, little pieces of mercury over here. And how you doing over there? Oh, we're getting closer. Ooh, this is feeling good.
But there was something wonderful about that to me. And then as I got older and I realized that you can have that kind of relationship with human beings, that the attraction, you're attracted, and the attraction brings you into union. And that's how you can be special without your ego, because you're attracting other. You're attracting them solely because you're filled with that essence, which is like the mercury, that will attract that essence in another person. So you become extraordinarily attractive, extraordinarily much the center, and yet at the same time, you're not putting yourself out there, because what you're doing is your attraction is for the purpose of joining.
Well, this is a perfect time to suggest that people, you get ready.
There's a train a-coming. You don't need no baggage, you just get on board. All you need is faith to Ibisu's home. You don't need no ticket, you just thank the Lord, yeah.
Jump!
just thank the Lord, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Eva Cassidy.
Oh, I couldn't have guessed that in a million
really?
Years.
Really? Really couldn't have guessed
no,
it?
No, I'm joking.
I thought it was kind of obvious.
I thought it was pretty obvious, too.
What did you all think out there? You think it was obvious or not so much obvious?
No, I thought that was another Eva Cassidy song that you were going to play. She was really good.
I love the lyrics of that song, Faith is the Key, so I want to address that, because I believe faith is the key. Now, Rochelle and I kind of go back and forth on this issue, you know, is the key the faith or is the faith the key? But just for the moment, I want to...
That's what we go back and forth on? I don't think that's what we went back and forth on, is the key, the faith. I don't know about that. Go
so,
ahead.
But
speak.
All right, faith. Faith is the action of will. That dares to take an action based on the premise that life is on your side, that whatever action you take will ultimately be rewarding because you're basing it on the premise that life is good, love is. We are living in aliveness. It's constant aliveness, and it doesn't go away, even though the ego, because it's a duality-based mechanism, would have us seem like it goes away. But faith says, no, it doesn't go away. It is always. So act. Acts of faith are acts that are based on the assumption that the goodness is there to support you, and that you actually abide in that goodness and are of that very goodness.
Yeah, itself. And when people are hurt, betrayed, rejected, and even tortured and killed, one of the things that disappears very quickly is their faith.
Their
faith is, it's almost as if their faith is eradicated before they are.
It's tough. I think that's what they mean by supreme decisions that really advance our growth. The concept that when you make a supreme decision, and to me that's an example of that kind of supreme decision where you're in a situation where the possibility of goodness and health and feeling good are so remote, the pain is so extreme, and to be able to make a faith choice in that kind of moment, That's
very evolved being.
Honey, I've seen you do it.
Well, I'm not that evolved.
Not often, but...
It's all true.
But I've seen you do it.
I mean, you know, you can't... When you're a babe, and we are babes in the sense that we're evolving beings, and we're definitely at a very young age in terms of our evolution. When I look at a little baby came in where I was working today, and she's, I think, 9 weeks old.
She wasn't coming in on her own then.
No, she was in her mom's arms, and I was looking at her, and I had just seen her last week. And a baby in a week, you know, changes totally.
You did a haircut already.
Pretty much. And she was looking at me, and I was just looking at her and just loving her. And she smiled at me.
Oh, my God.
She smiled
at me. She had gas.
But I don't care. It looked like a smile, and it just thrilled me all over. I was just like, so I think, you know, like, here we are. We're babes. And when we do something as involuntary, let's say, even... A smile, how delightful that is, how exquisite it is, and to realize that, you know, I work in this office here at Lupin, and it's such a it's so wonderful because people are coming in all day long, you know, in all attitudes and all dispositions, and my job is merely to love them no matter what's going on. you know, not to say how I love them in the sense that I have to be polite or nice or anything, but just to actually see them as these wonderful beings that they are, you know, going through their stuff. You know, if they were in a movie, I would be very attentive because they were a character on a big screen, and they are characters on big screens when they walk into my site. So I'm thinking, you know, we can make a difference in our lives by saying, well, life itself may not be good and fair, but I have the opportunity at every juncture to be good and fair.
Exactly. And so we don't have to be a slave to the not being good and fair, even though it's such a tempting ego assumption.
I gave you my soul. Well, no more. Now I'll kiss your eyes. No more. How I trusted you. Now I ask what for. You were life to me, but no more. Well, you had your chance.
No more.
Now I'll play the fool.
No.
How I needed love, but you closed the door. Oh, you'll laugh at me no more. How I bled for you, no. Shed my skin for you, no more. Oh, I worshipped you, that you can't ignore. But I ain't your slave, no more.
No more. I ain't bowing down no more. I ain't bowing down.
standing up. I ain't on the floor. I ain't gonna cry no
That I had the pleasure of seeing that performed on Broadway in a show called Golden Boy with Sammy Davis Jr. And I couldn't play all of it. It's a long piece, but I just had to play. I think it's fabulous, and I think it's a wonderful metaphor. I ain't bowing down to my ego no more. That, to me, is a beautiful statement of commitment, that song, if you think of it, of that. Because it's all about giving your power away to something. That's
absolutely
one thing.
Absolutely, the special relationship of anything. Yeah, people don't get that. You know, I think. Go ahead.
No, we just have 1 minute. Go
oh,
ahead.
1 minute. And people don't get that we give our power away.
Which
to
people?
Things. Those people.
Oh,
people
those are, people.
Those okay. Them. The we're, thems.
Right,
of this
we're
world.
Not talking about you all who are listening. We're talking about them, the over there people who don't get it. You. We sure get it. And this is Inside Out, The Naked Truth with...
Rochelle Strider.
Rochelle Strider. And our sponsor is Go Raw. Go get them some Go Raw. And we'll be back next Tuesday night and for another evening at home with the Striders.
And remember...
Whoa!
Remember...
What?
Resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.
Whoops. Okay. All right, I'll fix it.
What did you do?
I'll fix it.
Oh, you crazy person.
No, it was a process.
Did you do that?
No, Don, are you there?